It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Come on. Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grumbacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, the strong and powerful Vicki Benjamin. Vicki, are you ready to do this?
I absolutely am. Let's work on changing the world, George.
I love it. Let's do this. Vicki is a CPA. She's an MBA. She is the CEO of Karner Blue Capital, an organization focused on socially responsible investing. I'm excited to have you on. Vicki, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Thank you very much, George. Well, I started out in my career, as you know, as a CPA. I was a partner at KPMG for 10 years. And although I loved what I was doing, I said, you know what? I saw a lot of trends coming out, especially related to climate change. And I said, you know, I'm going to make a big jump from my career, go back into investment management. And Calvert Investments had an opening as their CFO. So back in 2015, I took a job as a CFO of the largest and oldest socially responsible investment firm. And so just to digress just a bit, just to give a little bit of background, what made Calvert so special was that they did bottom-up research on companies before ESG was data mining, really. And they would look at those companies that were the best in their industry, and then they'd also look at those that were laggards behind. And Calvert was really the first organization to start socially responsible investing and using investing in those companies that are good, but then most importantly, advocating, engaging, pushing the needle forward on those companies that lag behind. So when I joined Calvert in 2015, met very closely with the founders, Wayne Silvey, John Guffey, Rebecca Adamson, Jerry Mulner, and really understood the mission and the passion they had for changing the world to a better place and to be a more inclusive economy. So in 2015, all the way to the end of 2016, Calvert suffered some regulatory matters that forced its holding company, the company out of Nebraska, Ameritas Life Insurance, to sell those assets to Eaton Vance. And Eaton Vance took Calvert's assets and started Calvert Research and Management, and that's flourishing over at Eaton Vance. I stayed behind with my co-founder of Karner Blue Capital and to liquidate Calvert and administer these SEC matters, but then also to do something that I thought was very underrepresented or not represented at all, was socially responsible investing that is targeted towards biodiversity, conservation, and animal issues. So effective 1/1/2017, myself and my partner, Andrew Niebler, former general counsel at Calvert, set out on a mission to use the capital markets to influence the behavior of corporations surrounding biodiversity, animals, and the protection and sanctity of animal life by the behavior of corporations. So starting in 1/1/2017, Andrew and I started Karner Blue Capital.
Nice. Appreciate that.
So one thing I'd like to talk about, and I'm not sure that I spend a lot of time thinking about things because nobody's really done the animal approach to investing. So as we said, socially responsible investing has generally been about three real tenets, right? You restrictively screen for industries that are harmful to society, and socially responsible investing has been around since the 1700s. It started with John Wellesley of the Methodists, who said, I'm not going to use parishioners' donations to further causes that I think are detrimental to the activity and efficacy of humans, such as gambling, tobacco, firearms. So socially responsible investing started out with just restrictive screens. You know, you don't invest in those companies. As global conglomeration grows, though, it's hard to figure out, you know, what is, you know, a company can sell cigarettes in a grocery store, but that doesn't mean that they're a producer of cigarettes. So that got a little, that gets a little bit nichey and a little bit more difficult. But we, you know, that's where socially responsible investing started out, was restrictive screening. In the 1990s and the early 2000s, ESG integration came in, and that was basically companies, data providers were culling data from publicly available reports around certain key performance indicators. So we've all heard about GHG, global greenhouse gas emissions, and diversity initiatives. We've heard of social governance and environmental parameters really standard across industries, but aren't actually, may or may not be material to that industry. And I'll give you a little bit of an example. So for instance, GHG emissions scope, when you look at, you know, directly attributable to a company and its consumers, scope one and scope two, that's material to a fossil fuel company. I would argue that it's less material to a bank, for instance. So you need to be able to apply these ESG factors to industries where those they're material, and then to those companies where they're material. So when we were looking at starting Carter Blue Capital, I said, okay, restrictive screening we got, you know, we can figure out those companies. Those companies, and for Carter Blue, we restrictively screen out alcohol, gambling, of course, tobacco, firearms, and then we take it a little step further, another step further. We have no exposure to anybody who produces products surrounding fur. We all know about, you don't need fur. Fur is generally produced with quite a bit of cruelty. So we screened it. We restrictively screened out fur. And then a good friend of mine who's the CEO of Trillium said to me, Vicki, and this point's going to be proven further in the interview. He said, Vicki, I doubt you're going to find a company that has great animal welfare, biodiversity policies, that has horrible governance and social policies. And I said, that's probably true, and that hypothesis has in fact borne out. But he said, you really need to do an overall ESG screen. So we integrated ESG. So no company fully, meaning no company that we examine on a biodiversity metric or animal welfare are below their industry mean on environmental, social, and governance factors. And we double count environment because of the biodiversity conservation and climate change issues. So starting with a population of companies that have exceeded their mean in overall ESG, the Carter Blue specific process, it has evolved. And that's where we take those industries we consider material to the health of biodiversity and conservation. And we examine those companies that are above their industry mean in ESG criteria, and we put them through individual industry frameworks, which is very different. It's an extension of what we learned, and it's fine-tuned to focusing in on biodiversity, species diversification, and climate change indicators. In 14 specific industries that we've identified as high animal impact. So I'm going to pause there for a minute before we talk further about what's going on in the environment and what's going on in the world and how we see it and how our strategy has somewhat mitigated that. I don't know if you have any questions on what I've said so far, George.
Yeah, well, I appreciate everything you said. Is it that people think that there's not money in this and that's why they haven't been doing it?
The animal and the conservation, that specific piece, or just ESG in general? Because ESG assets are moving at a pretty rapid clip, right? We're at about 11.
Yeah.
2018, we're at $11.7 trillion. Nice. And I would expect with the transfer of wealth But I will address exactly the question specific to the animal species question. And that was the first thing I did, George, when I set about to do this. I had called a friend of mine at CSR Hub, and CSR Hub is a data miner, and they receive every single data feed of ESG data. So there's about 770 sources, probably more now. And I called them up and I said, why aren't there any animal products? Like, why? There's one in three people has a pet, probably not more now, and or gives to animal welfare organizations or donates time. Why are there products around gender lens? There's products around fossil fuel diversification. There's products around fair trade, but nothing representing, you know, even just conservation. And he culled through the data, and he came back with exactly what you would expect. Well, all the indicators that are coming from the data providers are tests beyond legal requirements. So the pharma industry, and I could spend 3 hours on how the pharma industry has come out by as a pariah, but they actually are doing the only thing they can do to get drugs passed. Is they test on animals because of the protocols from the FDA and EPA are so archaic, they require that, even though it's, the efficacy of animal testing is virtually only 8%. So I stepped back and I said, okay, now I got it. The data is not publicly available, so you can't package products. Most of your products from ESG are made from these Sustainalytics, MSCI, Bloomberg data, Carbon Disclosure Project. And I said, okay, so this is going to take us some time. So I hired people. I hired some ex-Calvert research people. Andrew and I embarked on doing bottom-up research, and that means hiring people to cull through sustainability reports, looking for animal exposure, calling companies. And I'd say the biggest component, what made the biggest difference, was we got involved with a lot of NGOs who would look at our model. So Humane Society, Compassion, and World Farming, particularly helpful, especially on the areas of wildlife exposure. And a lot of people don't think about it, but we have a 50% of portfolios wildlife exposure. I worked with the Rainforest Alliance, and I know I'm leaving a bunch of them out, but those were the primary helpers. And they looked at our models, and I would call PETA, of course, and Andy Weaver's Action Society. I can't leave those two out. And so then we determined those indicators that we thought were material to those industries of impact, where there's a material animal exposure. So stepping back a little bit, not every industry has 1 degree of separation from animals or their habitat. So for instance, that's our test. So you've got textiles and apparel, agriculture, animals and science, and animals in captivity are mostly animals and science, in laboratories, household and personal products, chemicals, pharma, of course, and you have animals involved in used for food, and those are animals in agriculture. And then you have all the other industries where animals are affected by the operations of corporations, where their habitats are affected. And those are a lot of the players you would think, the extractive industries, like especially metals and mining. We're going to come back to metals and mining. I'll come back to that quite a bit. Textiles and apparel, agriculture to the extent we're growing palm oil and cocoa in highly biodiverse areas. So we looked at all of these indicators in all of these industries and built industry-specific models. And what would show you somebody, a company that was a leader in these practices? And it took us a long time. It took us 18 months of going through all. We knew that we were going to have a very diverse portfolio because standards, climate change standards, protection standards, are very much more advanced, I would say, in the EU, especially in animal agriculture, than they are in the US. So we knew that our portfolio would have to be a global portfolio, and it encompasses the Morningstar Developed Market Index. So we start our research at 7,000 companies. And so, very long answer to a short question, but the real answer is that nobody had thought of it this way. Companies aren't reporting the data, so you can't package a product like this. You really have to step back and say, what industry impacts animals in what I think is a material way? And then what are the key indicators? And a lot of them are climate change based, especially when you're looking at the wildlife impacts. And what are the key indicators that we think are material in that industry that have not been used previously, or that we do use some that are previous indicators, but a lot of them are specific to Carnot Blue Capital. And all of this underlies the investment philosophy that investment risk related to companies that deal with animal and climate change, biodiversity indicators and factors have not been completely factored into stock price valuations of those companies. And those factors cause significant risk, either regulatory, environmental, or compliance, or most importantly, reputational to those companies. And so that this is a real value add, a potential value add for Alpha for returns when you're looking at something that has not previously been the market, the availability of the information is challenged.
Nice. Well, I appreciate everything you just said. I certainly appreciate you identifying a very, very important issue and then recognizing that the work has not been done or had not been done by that many groups, if any at all, and that you then picked up the ball and ran with it and did all this work. So are these investments that ordinary investors can participate in?
Oh, absolutely. So so as I said, it took us about 18 months to pull together benchmarks to measure the companies against each other. And then we do a fundamental financial analysis. This is not a rules-based approach. It really is. We have a CFA, we have a portfolio management investment committee. And we started out in 2018 with our animal welfare universe. And we developed 10 SMA strategies, depending on what exposure you want. So you may want the whole universe. You may want yours only global. We have 10 strategies. You may only want exposure to wild animals or those in captivity. And then we liked the product. We had a lot of curious people, because this is a new concept to socialize, right? It's easy to say divest of fossil fuels. Well, not easy, but that's a concept people understand and get, and it's boom, right? But investing for the welfare of the planet and climate change, that requires socialization. Mm-hmm. And so we said, you know what, this is a product for a lot of people. A lot of animal advocates are not in investment management, and I needed a product that could get to 401k platforms. So very excitedly, in September of 2019, we launched the Animal Impact Fund. And the name kind of says it all, the Animal Impact Fund. So we have a mutual fund that is available, and we're on a couple of platforms. As you know yourself, with such a senior position in the industry, it's kind of the chicken versus the egg, growing this business. And when you also have the issue of socializing a brand new concept, you're trying to grow assets, you've got performance, you need to grow assets, you need to sustain the firm. And so you've just got you get a track record. And so we have, coming up on almost 2-year track record on the SMAs, and the fund is just had its 6-month birthday. And so it's exciting times. It's a very exciting time and for us. And I'd love to talk a little bit, I think we might have time, about what's going on now and some of the thoughts we had at Carnot Blue Capital.
Yeah. Please.
Okay. So I spent a lot of time thinking about this, because we looked at you know, we see climate change, barometer of climate change is species diversification. So we're in the sixth largest extinction in the history of the Earth. And it is a barometer of the acceleration of climate change. So you step back and you look at what's going on now with the pandemic, and there's very similar, it looks like they're almost related, climate change and this pandemic. And I've done quite a bit. I read all the time, and it's just, Andrew and I always we like to bounce ideas back and forth. And so what we came up with is we think that industrialization and population growth has contributed to clearly climate change. And separately and discreetly, it has also exposed us to a greater risk of pandemic. And with the activities that are prompting the increase of the temperature on the planet are also those activities, those identical activities that are increasing our risk of pandemic. So if you look at it, and those things, and that the main criteria is the alternative land, deforestation. So when you look at certain industries, I'll name a couple. I said I'd come back to it. So you look at extractive industries, and we even put paper and forest in that, metals and mining, fossil fuels and energy. And then you look at agriculture, which is also a very large driver of deforestation, palm oil, which is grown in Malaysia, Indonesia, where the largest, most dense biodiversity areas. And you look at industrial agriculture, where animals are so close together that zoonotic diseases have a very high probability of jumping from the animal to the workers that are working around those animals. And you look at that and you see all of the deforestation and animal agriculture contribute to GHG. And they also create a hotbed for the spreading of a zoonotic virus. When you look at the Carnot Loop Capital strategy, and I really thought about this, many of our indicators are related to prevention of climate change acceleration before the pandemic came on. And then the fund has continued to perform very, very well, or outperform on its benchmark. No prediction of future results, but yeah, because it also, using the climate change indicators, you can extrapolate them across the pandemic-related indicators. So, for instance, our paper and forest is companies are graded on not a zero deforestation, but a positive forestation policy. We look at textiles and apparel and look at the sustainability and the certifications that they get. We look at the palm oil producers, and we look for RSPO, which is responsible sourcing of palm oil. Those are some of our key indicators. When we look at agriculture, we look at palm oil, cocoa. We look at the confinement of farm animals. We look at the use of antibiotics. And a lot of people haven't made this link. If companies need to use antibiotics, those animals are in very highly confined areas, which usually will spread disease, such as viruses, because of close contact with humans and animals. And it also will spread bacteria. And so you have animal agriculture is also a source, not only different measures of greenhouse gas emissions, depending on, you know, high, definitely 17% of methane gas comes from cows. So when you think about that and you look at it and you say, wow, we get such an overlap here. We're going into the biodiverse areas in Malaysia and Indonesia, growing palm oil, tearing down the trees, and you've probably seen the pictures of the poor orangutan, you know, on the limbs of trees fighting bulldozers. It gives me chills still. And you say, we're literally shaking these trees of pathogens, and the pathogens rain down. And when those animals are nervous, there's even more pathogens. So in the forest, what happened with Ebola was you know, you've got agriculture, you've got metals and mining, building roads, you have the human animal interface, the contact. And a lot of folks will take these animals and they'll either take them to a wet market or they'll kill them there. And those animals have diseases that we're not capable of. We haven't evolved. We've never seen that virus. So in the example, I'll give you an example of Ebola, bushmeat. So metals and mining has an issue with bushmeat. And that's one of our indicators is how do companies prevent that? What do they do to make sure that the native, you know, that the people that work there are not being, are not needing to go to bushmeat. So Ebola started out with a chimpanzee in the forest that was dead already. And the villagers are hungry. And they took the dead chimpanzee and ate it. And virtually almost the whole village died. And then Ebola was born and was carried out to the rest of the population. And that was supposed to Africa. So whenever we come in contact with wildlife that we are not known to and we aren't associated with, like, we run the risk. And there's the CDC has just recently come out and said probably close to 70% of all infectious diseases are going to be zoonotic, jumping from species to species. And the more we increase our interaction with other species, the more likely we are to have pandemic risk, increase our pandemic risk. So at Corner Blue Capital, we've been so focused on deforestation and the treatment of animals so that we distance the human from the animal. It has resulted in a very effective campaign and strategy against pandemic risk.
Never a more important time to be having this conversation than now. So I'm so grateful for the commitment that you've made and the work that you're doing. And I know that there's so much more work to be done. Thank you so much for coming on. Please tell us where we can learn more about you and how we can get involved.
Gosh. Okay. So I'm going to, I guess I've been a little long winded, but that's, I get so, you know, you can tell probably how excited I am.
It's all good.
It's all good. So first of all, carnivorecapital.com is our website. And, it talks more a little bit about our strategy. The animalimpactfund.com has its own animal impact fund has its own website. And then we have sister organizations. See, I don't just stop. I'm a busy girl right now. We launched a foundation, the Corner Blue Center for Humane Economy, centerforhumaneeconomy.org, that deals with advocating for change in corporations that are not public. So, for instance, most greyhound racing and the horse racing is a private activity. And so we advocate with private companies to change that behavior. And I think we have Animal Wellness Action, which is a PAC, political action committee, that comprised mostly of donors that are up on Capitol Hill. And we've got to address all the stakeholders, legislating for changes in laws. So specifically, we're working really hard with the FDA and the EPA right now. So you can check us out. All those websites are mentioned on the carnivorecapital.com website. And I look forward to folks taking a look at us and hopefully some helping animals and helping me help the world.
I love it. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Vicky your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas and cares about animals and the planet and people too. Go to carnerbluecapital.com. That's K-A-R-N-E-R-B-L-U-E capital.com. I will list that as well as the other sites that Vicky mentioned in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Vicky.
Thank you, George.
And until next time, keep fighting the good fight as we are all in this together.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.